Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to 106.7 The Fan, live and local. I'm your host, Adam Epstein. You can follow me on social media at TheOneSportsNerd. September 1st, 2019, Labor Day weekend. Seems like I'm always here on the holidays. They find time for your boy to get on the mic. Congrats to the Nationals, another great victory. You heard that here on 106.7 The Fan earlier today. So, live and local here until 7 p.m. If you want to join the show, as always, open lines, ask AWOD anything, 1-800-636-1067. Once again, I'm Adam Epstein, and this is my last show before the NFL returns next weekend. So it's time to break down who will be the playoff teams, because it's all about the fight for the playoffs. We know, and we've seen for many, many years, all you have to do is make the playoffs to give your team a chance, a fighting chance, to get to the Super Bowl. And I want to start the show with my initial thoughts of preseason week four, which really turned into the Steven Sims Jr. versus Cam Sims battle. Sims on Sims crime. If anyone is at home and they're on their computer and they're playing The Sims, that's Sims on Sims on Sims right there for you. So Cam Sims, who came from Alabama, everybody thought was a shoe-in to make the team this season. This was his year. And wow, he was just beat out straight up by Steven Sims Jr., who proved that he's quicker, he has better hands, his route running ability is great, and he makes plays on special teams. And so I believe that was the final straw there that let Cam Sims go. And it looks like the Skins are bringing him back for the practice squad, because God knows we will need help at wide receiver later this season. There's so many question marks there. But here's the one bright spot. Dwayne Haskins looked great. 10 of 17 for 104 yards and a touchdown. And here was my biggest thing. He took zero sacks. Zero sacks. He got out of the pocket. He did what he needed to do to avoid a sack and basically keep moving the chains and get down the field. He had a QBR of 96.2. So an excellent, excellent fourth preseason game for Dwayne Haskins, who, I said this a few weeks ago on The Fan, I hope he gets his chance probably week six. And hopefully things are going good by then. We're 3-2. I don't want it to be an injury, but it could end up being like that for Case Keenum, because we know our offensive line is going to struggle. But when Dwayne gets his option, when he gets his chance, I want him to be ready. I want him to prove that he can get out of the pocket, that he's a little bit more mobile than people think, and he can dart the football. I want him to use his arm strength and really take advantage of defenses, go hit them over the top with some of our speedy receivers. So now it is time for cuts, baby. Here on 106.7 The Fan, because the Redskins made their cuts, and I'm calling this the end of the average era. The end of the average era. If you don't have potential, then get out of Washington. This is cuts, baby. The biggest names that were cut from the Washington Redskins this season were two offensive players who Skins fans have known for over a year that they couldn't really make it in this league. We were hanging on to them like a Band-Aid that had been partially ripped off. It's just hanging around your arm, flopping around the wind, waiting for cut day to finally be ripped off. So those two names are Josh Doctson and Samaje Perine. Look, both of them were draft picks. And because you're draft picks, you want them to shine, but it really didn't happen. Both of them got plenty of opportunities to make an impact, and both of them failed under the spotlight. So what does this mean moving forward? The Samaje Perine cut, in my mind, means absolutely nothing. We were stacked, completely stacked at running back before, and I am confident, I'm as confident as ever, that we have one of the most talented backfields in the league. Adrian Peterson still has the juice. He still has it. Speaking of juice, Darius Geis, I'm calling him the juice. The juice is loose here in D.C. this season. From what I've seen from him, and it has been much, but it's been a lot of training camp and that few preseason carries, I feel like his vision is next level, and he has the ability to bounce any short run for a huge, huge chunk play. I just feel like we're going to get a lot of that Darius Geis this season where, yeah, it was just one play where he stiff-armed a guy and got an extra 5 yards. We're going to see that from him where Samaje Perine, I don't want to go in on him like crazy, but he was running right into linebackers and going down. Darius Geis is going to drag players with him for an extra 2 or 3 yards every single time. And Chris Thompson. Look, he may have his doubters. He has his haters out there. I know a few of them have called in or tweeted me during the show because I am a Chris Thompson stan. But he showed me time after time he's a warrior who will fight for every yard. And if you get him in space, if you get that man in space, it is damn tough to bring him down. Just like that Eagles game 2 seasons ago. I know Redskins fan remember this. He spun off of 3 defenders to keep going for a 40-yard touchdown and one of the only bright spots of the game for the Skins. Now, at wide receiver, that's a completely different story. Josh Doctson was cut because we stopped seeing his potential. We were tired of limping around with Mr. No Separation. Mr. No Separation is what I call him. Every single route he ran, the defender was all over him, making his only threat being those 50-50 balls over the top where he has to jump higher than the defender and make a spectacular catch. That's never a good one-trick pony to have it have to be lobbed up to you so you can high point the ball and make an incredible catch. Look, around the league, guys do that. Julio Jones gets away with that. Why? Because he's Julio Jones, and he has elite speed and great route running ability. Josh Doctson, on the other hand, every single time he ran a route, it seemed like there was no separation. And when there's no separation, it makes it that much harder to catch the ball, that much harder to get into space after you catch the ball. On paper, the Redskins looked at him and, look, you're a first-round pick that killed it at TCU, but it never came into fruition with him. And that leaves a lot of room now for younger Redskins receivers to work their way into the lineup. If healthy, it looks like this is how we will line up week one at wide receiver. We'll get Terry McLaurin at the number one, Paul Richardson is the X receiver, and Trey Quinn is the slot, with Robert Davis and Kelvin Harmon to back up the receivers. And then Steven Sims Jr. As the backup slot. Terry McLaurin has more pressure on him this season than Josh Doctson ever did because we have nobody to help him out behind him. We haven't seen any game tape on him. The only thing we've seen and heard is from training camp and practice. And hopefully we know and that he can stretch the field. That's the ability we want from him to start the season. Paul Richardson last year was the team's leading receiver with catches for more than 25 yards last season. So I'm talking about like 50-yard bombs. He was the leading receiver in that category for the Skins last year, which is interesting because he missed most of the last season. He's like our poor man's version of DeSean Jackson, who we know has trouble staying on the field. So when it comes to Paul Richardson's expectations this year, I think it's all about staying on the field, staying in the game, and let your play speak for itself. I'm not worried about Paul Richardson to get separation. I'm not worried about him dropping balls. No, I'm worried about him going across the middle and taking the big hit and not getting knocked out of the game. That's the number one thing that I am worried about when it comes to Paul Richardson. Because I'm telling you guys, I have so much confidence in Paul Richardson for a hard play action double move to beat the Eagles over the top week one. That's exactly what I envision out of Paul Richardson Jr. But it's one of those things where if we're not running the ball well, you're not going to be able to get them with the double move. You have to set things up for your other play. It's a team sport and everybody has to come together. Trey Quinn at the slot is the X factor. He made some nice plays last season, but look, he also got hurt. There's so many question marks at wide receiver for the Redskins, but Trey Quinn has plenty of potential. And the talk around training camp from all the media out there was that he would lead the team in catches this season. Wow. Mr. Irrelevant last year, going to lead the team in catches this season. We'll see how that goes, but I'm definitely excited to get Trey Quinn. I feel like he could be another. Look, we're saying poor men. Our receiver are poor men's people. They're not superstars. All right, Terry McLaurin could be good, could break the top of people. Paul Richardson's a poor man's. DeSean Jackson. Trey Quinn, I'm hoping, could be our poor man's. Cole Beasley. If you look around the league and you're comparing guys to what we have. But look, I'm excited for this season to begin. I'm so excited because it's another season, another chance to start over new for the Washington Redskins as they take on the Eagles week one. So this is a bit I like to do on my podcast, Play to Win. It's called Adam's Keys to the Game. You like that? That's an official sound effect. Like that, I'm not plugging it in through the board. Jalen, my producer, she's not doing this. No, these are my actually car keys here, and these are Adam Epstein's keys to the game. Number one, you have to establish the run week one against the Eagles. The Redskins didn't play the Eagles last year until December. So it's been almost a year since we faced our rivals from Philadelphia. And last year, we didn't really give ourselves a fighting chance. In the first matchup, Colt McCoy got injured right away, and Mark Sanchez came in and stunk up the game like everyone knew Mark Sanchez would. There was one bright spot from that game last year, and it happened in the first half when Adrian Peterson took a run up the middle, 98 yards, basically the length of the field, for a touchdown. That was the one bright spot against the Eagles last year. So, Redskins, we have to do a better job defensively against them. And on offense, it starts with establishing the run. In week 17 last year, it was Josh Johnson, and this depleted Redskins team who took the field and lost 24-0 to a playoff Eagles team fighting for seedings. So in those two matchups, the Eagles scored 28 points and 24 points. We are going to need to control the possession and put touchdowns on the board when we get into the red zone. To score 24, 28 points, you need to get down the field and get touchdowns. You cannot settle for field goals. And how do you do that? How do you get to the red zone and get it in every time? With a powerful running game. That's why my first key was to establish the run. Second key here, cause a turnover. Now, it just sounds simple. Oh, hey, cause a turnover. Hey, go out there and get us the ball back, man. But look, I have a lot of respect for Carson Wentz. Shoot, did you see him play 2 years ago? He couldn't be sacked against the Skins, dodging hits, ducking under tackles to scramble for 15 yards and get the first down. It was so frustrating. But with that being said, as good as Carson Wentz is, he does have the tendency to hold on to the football for too long. In 11 starts for Carson Wentz last season, he had a fumble in every single game. People don't realize that. Every single game. And two last year against Carolina. It's very possible to get to him and hit him on the arm as he's searching and searching and staying in that pocket for way too long. Because I'm telling you guys, I've seen the Eagles play. It's not impossible to hit him on the arm and cause a sack fumble. Yeah, it's a lot to ask. But if our secondary can cover well, there's going to be certain plays where Carson Wentz is just futzing around that pocket looking for someone open and thinking that he's freaking Donovan McNabb or something. He doesn't get rid of the ball right away. We need to take advantage of that. That comes with our secondary not giving up on plays and staying to coverage for 9, 10, 11 seconds. And for the front seven to get after Carson Wentz. Key number two was to cause a turnover next week when the Redskins take on the Philadelphia Eagles. I should mention, though, it didn't work for the Redskins last season. They totaled zero sacks against Carson Wentz. So maybe we can get one this year. Maybe I'm praying. I feel like we have one of the best front sevens in the league. Can we please get a sack on Carson Wentz? Key number three to defeating the Philadelphia Eagles. We have to stop their rushing attack. Because key number one, we have to run over them. Key number three, we have to stop them from running over us. We can't let them run through the throat of our defense. We need to control the clock. So in order to do that, we need to hold the Eagles to under 2.5 yards per carry, is what I'm saying here. My favorite play for the defense to make is to turn a first and 10 into a second and 11. How do you do that? You get into the backfield and you hit them right when they're handing the ball off. A tackle for loss. We do have the players capable of doing that. It's not crazy for me to come out here and say, the Redskins' key number three is to stop the Eagles to under 3 yards per carry. I hate to see a safety. I don't want to see Landon Collins coming up and making plays on the run. Yeah, every once in a while it's fine, but that's on the front seven to do their job. Stop the run and force the Eagles to be one-dimensional and get the heck off the field on third down. With all that being said, I'm a huge homer. DC sports my entire life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And for some damn reason, I have all this confidence in my Skins to punk the Eagles week one. Do you want to chime in right now? 1-800-636-1067. Am I getting you excited out there? We got week one of the NFL season next week. And I'm telling you right now, I'm picking on 1067 The Fan, the Redskins to win. Tell me I'm wrong next on The Fan. The NFL is back next weekend, and I'm Adam Epstein here on The Fan talking Redskins versus Eagles week one. If you want to chime in, 1-800-636-1067. I believe we're going to rock those Eagles. Rock them, sock them. Because for some reason, I have just so much confidence that the Redskins are going to come out the gate swinging. Come at these Eagles and get a jump start on them in the first quarter. If you want to chime in now, here's your chance to talk Redskins-Eagles, 1-800-636-1067. If you can hear it in my voice, I hope you can handle this. I am so excited for the Redskins season to be back. I am pumped. And here's another reason why I'm pumped. Adrian Peterson gave a great speech last week about this season.
You know, it's a blessing, you know, to be accepting this award. You know, it's crazy for me to think about, and no one else in here can really understand where I'm coming from.
Listen to
this
emotion.
We all have our personal life and situations that we go through. You know, for me, around this time last year, 2 weeks before this luncheon, I was at home. You know, I was at home with my kids, working out, having a good time. And, you know, I was blessed enough to get a call to come down and work out. And I guess they wanted to see if I still had it. Doug, thanks for calling me down. I'm like the oldest guy there, of course. These guys are like 10 years younger than me. And I go out and I feel like I did a great job. Like, I felt really good about my performance. So I'm like, well, if they're looking for a running back, I don't see how out of the group, you know, they're not going to, you know, pick me just to come up here and help them out in any way I can. It was unexpected for me, you know. But, of course, the day didn't end without me signing. And now when I look back, I'm like, man, like, you go through so much. Like, my message is, like, no matter what you're going through in life, because we all go through things, and no one would know because you smile all the time, or you might frown, and you can still be happy inside, but you never know what anyone else is going through in life. But if you just continue to keep God first, continue to put one foot in front of the next, and chase your dreams, and especially a lot of these young guys, because we have like 80-some guys, and 30-some guys won't make the team. You know, if you continue to put one foot in front of the next, you can accomplish anything you put your mind to. You just got to have faith and believe and put in the work. You always get out what you put in at the end of the day. Have faith in yourself.
So how could you not be excited after hearing that from Adrian Peterson? Another season with the Redskins coming in with a Hall of Fame running back, meaning anything is possible. Yeah, he might be on his last leg, but his last leg is stronger than half the running backs in the league, half the running backs that have played for the last 10 years. Adrian Peterson is a god of football, and he's running people over left and right, and I cannot wait to see him next Sunday against the Eagles, because I got this feeling, I got this tingle in my body here that we are going to come out of the gates sprinting and take an early lead against the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's go to the phone lines, 1-800-636-1067, if you want to chime in. Mark in Maryland, you're on The Fan.
Well, good evening.
Thanks for calling.
I just want to say I love your passion on the show, and you have a great show.
Thank you.
I haven't heard you that much, but I like the fire in you, man. I like the fire in your belly.
Thank you.
And I just want to say, first of all, okay, to the Skins, I'm a lifelong Redskins fan. I've been one for 39 years. so you know, so at least I've been through all the early good and all the Super Bowls
right.
in my younger life. But you know, and I love your optimism, but the thing is, there's, to me, I can't be real optimistic with this football team because our receiving core doesn't scare anybody. I mean, this is not the second coming of the posse.
Right. No, you make a good point here, and here's how I would respond. This is a team that wants to run the heck out of the ball and play action against people. And if we're going to play action against guys, at least we have some speed on the outside with McLaurin and Richardson. And Trey Quinn could hopefully be a serviceable slot receiver. So although you may have a lot of question marks with receivers, just know if this team is winning, it's because they're running the crap out of the ball.
Yeah, okay, that's a key. Of course, we're going to have to run the ball to take the pressure off Mr. Keenum and maybe Haskins later. And all of that, and but the offensive line doesn't come in as also our strong suit of, with our receiving core.
Yeah.
Now I like our defense. Our defense is probably has the most talented that it has been in years. Probably going back to the Greg Williams days in the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
But really, I think the defense mainly is going to have to carry this team somehow, some way, you know, and especially to prevent the big play and get more pressures and hits and sacks on the quarterback because I think it's going to be a struggle on offense again this year with this football team.
Yeah, Mark, I appreciate your call. You make some good points. The team is going to have to score first and hold on to that lead, and it's going to have to be the defense who makes stops late in the game. I mean, let's remember last season. It was every single game. If the team did not have the lead first, we basically lost. The Carolina Panthers game, we stole that game. We were up by like 5, I think, in the fourth quarter on the final drive. Cam Newton went like 85 yards and got stopped at the goal line and didn't score. Our defense made a huge stop late in the game. They're going to have to continue to do that this year. We're going to have to rely on our defense and our running game. But I'm still confident here. Nothing has brought me down yet because the season hasn't started yet. Let's go to Mark in Largo. You're on the Fan with Adam Epstein.
Well, hey, how you doing, Adam?
That's good, man.
That you're out here talking and not being behind the junkies and stuff. That's great to see.
Thank you.
I would be there with you if Trent was out there.
Uh-huh.
But Trent Williams not being there is a problem. And just like I told the caller screener, I said, you know, the Redskins are going up against three difficult defenses that could put pressure on people. And the biggest problem, I think, with this team is if Case Keenum gets sacked 4 or 5 times, you're going to need to run the ball with Peterson and probably Geis and see what you can do with Thompson. I get that. But, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, Jake Gruden could be in trouble. Let me say this. If my personal opinion, if Keenan gets sacked 4 to 5 times for the next 4 or 5 games, that's all on Bruce Allen. And I don't think you could fire Jay before you fire Bruce Allen. And this whole situation with Trent Williams, this right now is when the time starts, because every week that offensive line takes a beating, Trent Williams is sitting back saying, yeah, how you like me now?
You're right.
And people are still yelling, and people have been yelling for Bruce Allen's head for the last 5 years. Really, a lot of people wanted him to go with Mike Shanahan, to be bluntly honest with you. And I don't blame him. He should have. But, you know, it's hard, man, when you don't have your anchor, your offensive lineman. I see your optimism. It's very nice. But, you know, their schedule, their first 5 games are no gimmies at all.
Right. There's no jokes. There's no jokes. Mark, I appreciate your call, and you make a lot of good points. Look, there are plenty of reasons to be worried. Trent Williams being a perfect example. It pisses me off. I hope all Redskins fans are out there pissed off when they heard the news about Laremy Tunsil, and they're hearing about Jadeveon Clowney. All the other teams with holdouts got trades done yesterday, and now you're hearing Ezekiel Elliott is coming back in, and he's going to be part of the Cowboys. Of course you should be pissed off that they haven't figured out this Trent Williams situation. But I'm over here speaking optimism because I'm hoping and I'm praying, and I think there's actually a good chance that Donald Penn can do a good job in this first game holding it down at left tackle. I'm feeling very confident about that. We have a solid running game, and I think we're going to have this underdog mentality going into Lincoln Financial Field. and we take on the 2017 NFL champions. Here's what I'm going with. I'm picking the Redskins to win 20-17. I've got the Redskins being able to run out the clock and hold on to the football in that final drive of the fourth quarter, not even giving Carson Wentz a chance for late-game heroics. Peterson, 75 yards. Darius Geis, 45 yards. Thompson, 30 yards out of the backfield with catches. Redskins ground and pound the Eagles into the dirt and start the season off with a win. Who's with me? Hail to the Redskins. HCTR, fight for all DC here on The Fan. To 106.7 The Fan on a Labor Day weekend. I'm Adam Epstein. You can get in touch with me on social media, please. I love when I hear from fans at The One Sports Nerd. And it is Labor Day weekend, which means happy birthday to my mom. And she doesn't like sports. There's no joke about it. She does not like sports at all. But she likes when her son is happy. And the only thing that makes me happy is DC sports winning. That's beyond. I'm being totally honest. When the Nationals were winning this weekend, it was a good weekend for me because of that. When the Redskins win, it makes my week. When they lose, I am depressed. It's the truth about it. But I have the Redskins beating the Eagles in week one of the NFL season. 1-800-636-1067 is the number if you want to chime in. It is my time now to go through the division champions throughout the NFL and give you my wild card picks. Who's going to be in the playoffs? 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 Yes, who's going to be in the playoffs? I'm going to start with the AFC East. I think it's pretty simple. Do not bet against Tom Brady. I'm picking the New England Patriots. The AFC North is an interesting one. Everyone's all in on the Browns. Everyone here at the station, namely Matt Valdez, is obsessed with the Ravens and thinks that they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl this year. My division champ for the AFC North is the Steelers. And I think the Steelers are a team that... this might be the end of that little dynasty with Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin where they won a Super Bowl. Antonio Brown is gone, but they still have Smith-Schuster, and they have a lot of talent on offense. It's going to be a pretty interesting season to see how James Conner does at the running back. All eyes on him now with Le'Veon officially gone. But I have the Steelers winning the AFC North. In the AFC South, I believe it is the Texans division to lose with Deshaun Watson with a powerful defense. But I'm not going to pick them. I'm going to pick the story. And the story is the Indianapolis Colts with Jacoby Brissett. And this is a team that is going to be playing for each other for the entire year. And Andrew Luck just took out an ad in the paper, a full-page ad to thank the Indianapolis Colts fans for basically supporting him throughout the years. And he's so happy to be living in Indianapolis and to be a Colt for a lifetime. And I think that the team's going to rally around this. And look, T.Y. Hilton, they've got some wide receivers out there. They got my guy Mo Alie-Cox, a tight end, along with Eric Ebron, who basically set the record for tight end touchdowns last year. Yes, it's the Texans' division to lose, but I think they do lose it to the Indianapolis Colts. The AFC West, man, the Chiefs are good this year. The Chiefs are going to be fantastic. I think we're looking at a 14-2 team, maybe 13-3. I don't think there's anyone stopping the Chiefs from winning the AFC West. Now over to the NFC. Starting with the NFC West, I love me some Sean McVay. I don't know why. Pretty boy with blonde hair, better looking than me, but I love him. And I'm picking the LA Rams to win the NFC West. For the NFC South, I'm going with the New Orleans Saints. I love me some Alvin Kamara. I think Drew Brees has still got it. That's for sure. He's got plenty of weapons. I have the Saints winning the NFC South. The NFC North, it's good. It pains me to say this, but I have this faith in Kirk Cousins to have a bounce back year this year and to hook up with Diggs and Thielen on the outside and to win the division with the Minnesota Vikings. And here in the NFC, I've got the Redskins beating the Eagles week one, but I do think the Eagles are the best team in the division. They get it done with an 11-5 record. Now, when it comes to the wild cards, in the AFC, I have the Ravens. and I have the Cleveland Browns. I'm all on board the Baker Mayfield train. They've got Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry. I'm taking a risk, and I'm taking the Browns as a wild card team, and wild cards in the NFC. Of course, I like me the Seattle Seahawks. I'm a huge Russell Wilson fan. I think Chris Carson's going to be a solid running back for them this year. And look, the Seattle is a team that if they make the playoffs as a wild card, watch them make a Super Bowl run. It seems to happen. It seems like they get close every time they make the playoffs. And then I'm putting the Cowboys in there now that they get Zeke back. Oh, it drives me crazy. But I have to do that. So coming up next on The Fan, I'm going to be joined by Art Schell. And you ask, who is Art Schell? Well, he was a Raider in the 1970s and a coach for them in the 90s, actually being named the first black head coach in the former National Football League. And why is this interesting? What's the local tie? Well, him, James Shaq Harrison, and DC's own Doug Williams decided that black football players need a location to dedicate all their trophies to and all their awards. And so they came up with the Black College Football Hall of Fame. And it came into fruition this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. So Art Schell joins me next to talk about that. Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. I'm Adam Epstein here on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm happy to be joined now by Art Schell. And Art, I'm so glad to have you on here today, and you're promoting the Black College Football Hall of Fame. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. Life is good.
Well, that's great, man. And so for those of you that don't know that are listening right now, Art was named head coach of the Los Angeles Raiders in 1989, becoming the first African-American head coach in the modern National Football League. And so, I mean, that's such a great accolade. And so when people ask you about that and what it was like back then, what do you say?
Well, I say my feeling is that it was a great opportunity. I was somewhat a little surprised when Mr. Davis decided to make me the head coach of the Raiders. Of course, that's a dream. I always wanted to be a coach, and he knew that. But at that particular time, it hadn't been done since 1921, when Fritz Pollard was named head coach back during that time frame. And for me to get the opportunity to do that, it was just a great thrill for me. And then doing it for the organization that I had played my football career under just made it a lot more exciting.
And when you talk about your playing career, what is some of your favorite memories? What comes to mind right away?
Well, always your teammates. I had a great teammates that I played with. I had outstanding coaches. We had a line coach. My line coach, he coached three guys into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So that said a lot about him, and I learned a lot under him. But to play in the Super Bowl is one of the biggest thing you can do in the National Football League as a player. And, boy, I tell you what, that was a great opportunity for us, and we took advantage of it in 1977 when we played the Vikings. And that's a thrill that I'll never forget.
That's excellent, man. And so I believe you played for John Madden. And, look, I'm 26 years old, and all I know him from is from the Madden, the game. I mean, Madden 20, I'm playing it every night. But what was it like playing for him? He's such an iconic coach.
John was a great guy to play for. John was an assistant. Of course, when I came to the Raiders, John was a linebackers coach. And the next year, I'm looking up, John is now the head coach of the Raiders. So John was great to play for. He is the kind of guy that got to know his players well. And the one thing I learned from John is that this is a people's game. And if you understand people and know who your people are, you can have success coaching in the National Football League. And he was great about that. He knew every player, what they were about, and how to prod each one to get the best out of them. So, John, he was funny, too. Oh, was he funny. You watch him on TV when he was doing the announcing. He was funny to people, but he was funny to us also. But when he got serious, you knew it, and you went out and played well for him. I enjoyed playing for John.
And, you know, John was actually quoted, and I have it here right now, saying about you that some players never think about anything but their own jobs. But Art always thought about everybody else's job. And when you hear him say that, what does that kind of mean to you? Is that how you knew that you needed to get into coaching?
That meant that I was always trying to learn not only the position that I had to play. I wanted to know what was happening at other positions. I wanted to know what was happening with the players that we had to play against. Like when I would sit up and study, I not only studied the guy I was playing against, but I studied the defensive secondary. I studied the linebackers because I wanted to know how those guys were playing and what we had to face. So I tried to learn as much about the game as possible. And, of course, we had good coaches like John that taught us the way.
I'm joined now by Art Schell, former star offensive lineman for the Oakland Raiders and also part of two Super Bowl championship teams. And so we've got earlier today was the first ever Black College Football Hall of Fame Classic taking place on the campus of the Pro Football Hall of Fame over Labor Day weekend. And the game includes a game at Tom Benson Hall, Fame Stadium in Canton between Alabama A&M University and Morehouse College. And it's being televised nationally. Marching bands from each school will perform during halftime and post-game concerts. And so, Art, I'm kind of wondering, how does being in the Hall of Fame for you help break barriers for other African Americans to become head coaches and management and then ownership?
Well, it was a great opportunity for me. And after I came through, we had Dennis Green came through, Tony Dungy. But the key thing is I felt when I got as soon as I got the job, I turned to one of my assistant coaches, Terry Rubisky. You know, we played together and stuff. And I said to Terry, we have to be successful somewhat. We have to try to do the best we can because the door's been open now. So let's make sure that door stays open. So if we have a modicum of success, then that will open the door for other coaches, guys that want to be head coaches in the league, to get a chance. And we did pretty good at the beginning there. And so it kind of opened up the door. And next thing you know, Denny Green is coming in as a head coach. So we felt at that time, and I sure felt it. I told him, we got to be successful. We got to win in order to make sure there are others that get the opportunity that I have.
And so I'm such a football head. I love the game of the NFL. I love watching it. I'm a Redskins fan here in Washington. But I'm kind of wondering, in 1990, when you lost to the Bills in the AFC Championship, did you think the Bills would eventually get a Super Bowl? I mean, I cannot believe that they lost four times in a row.
The Bills had a great football team. They had a great organization. Marv Levy did a great job with that football team. They had some talent, man. They had a great quarterback. They had a great pass rusher. They had great linebackers, great running back. Those guys, some of those guys in the Hall of Fame. And you can see why, because they had a great team. And when we played that game and the championship against them, and I looked up at the sky and said, Lord of all days, why today? Because we stunk the joint up. We played well. We played well all year long. But the previous week, we lost our great running back, Bo Jackson. And that really took a lot of wind out of our football team because he was something special. And he had played well for us all year long. And I felt that with him and Marcus Allen going into that game with the two of them, that we could going to try to control the ball on the ground a little bit. Even though it was snowing, it was cold and stuff like that, we felt that we could run the football. But when we lost Bo the week before, that really took a lot of wind out of our football team.
Oh, I understand that completely. So, Art, I'm currently watching the newest season of Hard Knocks, of course, with the Oakland Raiders, and I'm fascinated by the history of the Raiders, especially the poem, The Autumn Wind. And I'm just kind of wondering, when you were there, I mean, how much was that played? How much was that talked about? And maybe you can just also talk about your time with the Raiders. I mean, just such a great franchise in the NFL.
Well, you know, Al Davis was a great owner. Al Davis also, like John, was a people's person. He understood players. He understood people. He knew all the techniques that every position out there. So he could teach, and he could teach coaches to teach. So he knew it all. But he had a philosophy: just win, baby. And he meant that. Just win, baby. And he said, You guys worry about playing and winning, and I'll take care of the rest of the stuff. Don't worry about anything beyond playing the game and trying to be successful for the Raiders. And it was a great opportunity for me. I enjoyed that franchise. They let players be players as long as you don't do anything to embarrass the organization. We were allowed to be grown men. And that's one of the things that I really learned from. Allow guys to be men. You don't treat them like kids. Now, if they act like kids, then, you know, they'll be, you know, you sit on them. But other than that, we were freewheeling. But one thing we do when it came to Sunday, we just, like John used to say, just play like hell. And we did that.
Oh, that's excellent. So what do you think is the biggest difference between the NFL nowadays and when you played?
There's some things. They still come down to one thing: blocking and tackling and throwing the football,
right,
and defending. All those things are come to play. But I think he got probably more quarterbacks now because everybody's throwing the ball more nowadays. We're not running the football a whole lot. Everybody's spreading everything out with the three wide receiver sets, four wide receiver sets. And so there's a lot more throwing of the football. But also at the same time, quarterbacks are getting hit a lot now too, nowadays too, because you're not running the ball as much. And so you open up that offense like that, you got to expect they're going to blitz you and come and get your quarterback and find out what he is and what he's all about. But it's an exciting game. It's still an exciting game. And no matter what anybody thinks, defense is important, but what sells our game to the American public and people around the world is offense, scoring.
Yeah.
That's what sells.
And so I'm kind of interested in your career and the fact that you were such a star O-lineman, but not many O-linemen end up becoming coaches. And you said you were surprised when you got the job, and, you know, Al Davis kept saying he wanted it to be a Raider. And what were the, you know, opening weeks and the months when you finally became the head coach of the Raiders? What was that like?
Oh, it was great. Look, I'd said to Al when I was about my sixth year in the league. I played 15 years, about the sixth year in the league. Because, see, when I came up, I always wanted to be a coach. But, you know, as you grow older, your goals become higher.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I wanted to go to college, get a degree, come back and coach in high school. And then once I got to the pros, I said, well, you know, maybe I can do this in college. So the goals grew. So I wanted to become a outstanding pro player and go back to college and coach. So one day, I'm walking off the field to practice after training camp after practice, and I learned this from early on that when I was a youngster and a rookie, there was a one offensive lineman or two offensive linemen would stay out after practice, and they'd do extra work. And they called me, one guy said, come on, Arthur, we're going to do some work. And so we did that, and then I picked it up too. So those guys were gone, but here I am becoming the guy that would go out, and then I did the same thing in training camp. I grab a youngster, he's a rookie. I said, come on, man, I'm going out there to do some extra work. Come on and work with me. So that's how we evolve as players and as teammates. And so one day I'm walking off the field, and John said to me, hey, coach. And boy, a light bulb went off. So I left, walked about a week later. I'm walking off the field again after doing the same thing. Al said, hey, coach, how you doing? Oh, boy, the light bulb really went off then. So that meant they had talked. Art's always working. You know, he looked like he wants to help the young guys. And so I walked over to Al when he said that. I said, look, one day when I get through playing, I want to stay with this organization and learn how to become a coach. And all he said was, you continue to do well. You're doing well. Continue to do well. And when that time comes, we'll sit down and talk. So 9 years later, that time came, and then we talked. And Tom Flores was the coach at that time. Tom and I used to talk when I was playing, and Tom was the assistant coach. Tom used to talk about wanting to be a head coach, and then I used to talk about wanting to be a coach. And we'd talk, and then Tom became the head coach during that time frame. And so I talked to Tom, and Tom said, I have no problem with it. Let's do it. So I became an assistant coach in 1983, the year after I retired. And then in 1989, after being on the staff, after Al had hired Mike Shanahan and it didn't work out well, fourth game of the year, I got a midnight phone call saying that I'm thinking about making you the head coach. That's how it evolved.
Wow, so that's an interesting story. And you know what I like about it is you just show the precedent of if you work hard, you play hard, things come your way. And being here in Washington, I always idolized Chris Samuels. I felt like he was always, always working extra hard to try to get better and improve with his teammates. Mm-hmm. And so I commend you for that, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and so the Black College Football Hall of Fame Classic has been years in the making, and it's finally come to fruition. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. It's, you know, first of all, James Harris, better known as Shaq, Doug Williams, two guys, quarterbacks from Grambling, got together and they decided, you know what? We can't lose the historical history of Black college football. And we got to do something to try to bring attention to Black college football and its history. And so they came up with the idea of creating a Black College Hall of Fame. And I got a call. They wanted me to be one of the trustees, Will Lanier, Mel Blount, and who's the other guy? And we got a group of guys that that really believed in what they were trying to do. And so we went about, they started the induction down here in Atlanta, and Arthur Blank was really great. He helped us put the banquet on, and the community, the business people in the community helped us put it on. So now our thinking started going to having a structure, a building that we can take mementos and things like that and put it in a Hall of Fame.
Right.
And we looked around and looked around here in the Atlanta area and looked at some other areas, too, as to where we can try to put this thing, and it's going to be costly, and how are we going to raise funds to do it. And lo and behold, with conversation with Joe Horrigan and David Baker, who are guys at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they jumped on board and said, maybe there's something that we can help you do. And opened up their arms to us. The next thing you know, we're getting a place in right next door, and the buildings that they're in, and because they're doing some remodeling up there, and we're gonna take over the old offices, and have a space for a Hall of Fame museum. And it's because of those guys reaching out, lending a hand, and helping guide us. That stuff is coming to fruition, and the idea was to have a Black College Hall of Fame Classic here there in Canton, Ohio, and the first two teams are Morehouse and Alabama A&M, two historically Black schools, and hopefully this will launch a successful time for us. Throughout the years that we'll have a classic where we're going to have each year, and we get more and more people to come and understand the history of Black College Hall of Fame with the bands and the cheerleaders and all that kind of stuff, the dancing and all the things that go along with having, it's like a homecoming week, you know?
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to it, and we think it's going to be a blast. And we couldn't have done this without the support of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I feel like some people don't realize that the Pro Football Hall of Fame has at least 10% historical Black college players. So it's incredible.
Yeah, when you got guys like Jerry Rice, Black College Hall of Fame, went to Mississippi Valley State, that tells you what kind of talent level that we had.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, I really appreciate your time. I really enjoyed this conversation. I really appreciate it, Art.
Okay, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Yep, take care. Take care. Really appreciate it, man. That was Art Schell, who was the head coach of the Los Angeles Raiders in 1989, becoming the first African-American head coach in the modern National Football League. What a guest. What a story. I'm Adam Epstein. I'll be right back on The Fan. Today's going to be a good day. That's Ice Cube there. Adam Epstein here on 106.7 The Fan. So today in sports, an epic day, September 1st, 2007. I can remember exactly where it was when it happened. I was at Glory Days Grill in Lorton, Virginia with all my boys watching as Michigan was upset. Number 5 Michigan was upset by Appalachian State in Ann Arbor 34-32 after leading for most of the game. Michigan then took the lead on a 40-yard touchdown run. Appalachian State drove the length of the field to tie it, to take the lead. Michigan then gets down the field just in time to win it with a last-second field goal, but no, the kick is blocked. The kick is blocked, and Appalachian State completes one of the greatest comebacks one of the greatest upsets in college football history. And there were some good upsets yesterday in college football. North Carolina, 2-9 last season, rallied to beat South Carolina. Georgia State, who was paid by Tennessee to play them in this opening game. I believe Tennessee was favored to win by like 24.5. My friend James almost took the bet. I said, don't do it. Georgia State ends up winning that game. True freshman for Auburn, Bo Nix, with an unbelievably incredible final drive and final play to win as Auburn defeated Oregon. And now moving on, USA Basketball has started underway here for the FIBA World Cup. And yeah, a lot of people have been doubting them. There's no superstars really on the team this year, I guess, besides Donovan Mitchell and Kemba Walker. But they defeated the Czech Republic in their first game, 88-67. Mitchell had 16. Kemba Walker and Harrison Barnes each poured in 14. And Jason Tatum, who I love, who plays for the Celtics, had 10 of his own. And so they will play Turkey on Tuesday. And then Thursday, they take on Japan. If you're a DC fan, the Washington Wizards' own Rui Hachimura plays for Japan, and man, he had a highlight reel dunk destroying Ersan Ilyasova in their game earlier this morning. So watch that in the AM all week. The Nationals walk off 7-6 Friday night with a 2-run single from Anthony Rendon. Saturday was Strasburg Day, 7-0 defeat. 7-0 victory, where they just dominated. And then today, everyone seemed to get a home run, and they defeated the Marlins 9-3. So since August 9th, the Nats have scored 7 or more runs. That's 16 in the last 21 games. All they do is put up touchdowns on the board now. Nearly every single night, you can get that Papa John's 50% off. Who doesn't love free pizza? That's what I'm about. And over to soccer here in the MLS. DC United, who had recently been struggling, dropping down in the playoff race, they were able to win on the road 3-0 Saturday night against the Montreal Impact. United, struggling. Wayne Rooney suspended, but it doesn't matter. Recently signed striker Ola Kamara with two goals. They had 3 goals in just 12 minutes. Paul Areola put in the other one. So the win moves DC United back into fourth place. Which would give them a home game with 4 games left before the 2019 MLS playoffs. In tennis, my guy John Isner fell in a 4-setter, and Coco Gauff lost in singles but won in doubles. Coco Gauff alive in the U.S. Open. I'm Adam Epstein. If you missed any of the show, you can catch it at the 106.7 The Fan Overtime podcast feed. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Jalen for producing this show. Have a good Labor Day weekend. Happy birthday, Mom.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.